Top 5 Face-Off contains adult themes and language that some people may find offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
He's Matt Hurst.
He's Matt Squirrel.
And this is Top 5 Face-Off, the official world ranking of everything. What are we ranking this week, Hurst?
Top 5 movies of 1999.
Coming right up after this.
There's more than five, call Squirrel and Hurst. It's the Top 5 Face-Off. Actual facts. It's the Top 5 Face-Off. The facts are exact. Top 5 Face-Off. Top 5 Face-Off. Official world ranking. What's next? You decide.
This is Top 5 Face-Off, which is the official world ranking of everything. Hurst and I will count down our top 5 in a particular subject this week, movies of 1999, and then you, the ranker, can vote on our website to tell us which one is correct.
Obviously, we can't just get to the point. We're British. Mm. So what's the weather been like?
Not as good as it was, sadly. We had that excellent warm week, and then we had a week with some rain. Now we have a week where it's cold. Not been great, the weather. Down my way, and today continues to be a bit shit.
It's actually all right up here today. It's quite sunny. We've been hit by the coldness as well after a good couple of warm weeks, which has been a bit brutal, but the sun has been out a bit recently. My plants are starting to grow. My little plum tree is showing its first blossoms, which is nice because it's the first time since I've had it that it's blossomed. My lemon tree is growing beautifully now. It's sensed that the sun is out outside and has sprouted a whole bunch of new leaves. So that's good.
Ooh. Is there any lemons?
No, no lemons yet, but it's only a couple of years old. I've grown this one since it was a pip. Long story, but I'm going to tell it. I got this amazing lemon from a farm shop, an organic lemon from a farm shop, and it's the juiciest damn lemon that I have ever seen. Carly made an outstanding lemon drizzle cake from it.
Nice.
And I thought, this is genetically superior. So I took one of the pips, I planted it, and lo and behold, it started growing as nature intended.
You're hoping for the same thing with all the lemons it creates forevermore.
Yeah, I'm aiming for a second generation lemon drizzle cake.
Well, thanks for tuning in to Top 5 Face-Off, the UK's top horticultural podcast.
What's been making you feel, old squirrel?
What's been making me feel old, Hurst, is this week's subject, movies of 1999. Feels like 99 was, I don't know, 7 years ago. It wasn't. It was 26 years ago. That's a lot of years ago, Hurst. And what specifically made me feel old was reading about the people who debuted in this year, who had their first movie in 1999. Would you like to hear just a few people from the very long list of people whose first film was 26 years ago?
You know that I would.
All right, strap in. Here we go. Amy Adams, Zooey Deschanel, James Franco, Dakota Johnson, Ashton Kutcher, Idris Elba, Brie Larson, Simon Pegg, Sean William Scott, and Hugh Goddamn Jackman.
Wow, that's quite a list.
That is quite a list of excellent people, but also a list of people that I thought had been around, you know,
longer. You know what's been making me feel old?
I don't.
It's my love of napping. I've developed a really strong relationship with sleep to the fact that I have now perfected the art of the afternoon nap. I have my blackout mask. I put my headphones in and listen to waves lapping on a beach for an hour. And I then, it's never a deep sleep because I often snore myself awake because I'm lying on my back. So I never get into that deep sleep zone, which is perfect. It just rests your body and then like, yeah, I feel great afterwards. And on top of that, I've started wondering what time is acceptable to start thinking about going to bed. So now pretty much from 8:30 p.m., I'm thinking, would it be a respectable to go to bed now? Would it be an acceptable time? No, you're right, it's not. But 9 o'clock, I feel like, yeah, now we're in.
Why is it that every time you talk about feeling old, I just hear it going, mate?
Oh, hopefully it makes you feel like you're not getting old as much, although you are older than me. So if I'm doing that, you're getting old.
It should be said that a couple of our rankers actually got in touch and told me after last week's episode that they too drink Bovril at the football.
Oh, there you go.
Yes. Was it a couple? Maybe it's just one. Definitely Kovac. If you also got in touch to tell me that, I apologize, but I have forgotten.
Yeah, well, whilst we're doing shout-outs, it's nice to pop a name check for some of our regular listeners who actually communicate with us between episodes, either to tell us we're wrong or we're right, or say that we were funny about something. So big shout-out to Matt and Laura, who will probably be eating their dinner whilst they're listening to this, and Mark Allams, who will correct me when I'm wrong and support me when I'm right. So the good friend who, you know, he's not just there telling you you're always right. He'll call you out when you're wrong.
So he's a semi-Malcolm.
Yeah, he's got some certain Malk tendencies when it comes to Star Wars. He really knows his Malk, but he's a good guy anyway.
He really Malks his stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So, yay. Shout out to Matt, Laura, and Mark.
Hello to all our lovely rankers. If we don't mention you by name, it's probably because we don't know it yet. Tell us. Now we've finished saying hello to some of our rankers, Hurst. What's going on where you are?
Well, mate, this affects all of us. Turns out that the universe has thrown us a massive curveball. The largest ever map of space reveals we might have gotten dark energy totally wrong all this time.
Oh, no. I, for one, am very, very interested in dark energy, Hurst. Tell me more.
Well, aren't we all? As it happens, astronomers studying the largest ever map of the cosmos have found hints that our best understanding of the universe is due a major rewrite. Ooh. So the analysis, which looked at nearly 15 million galaxies and quasars spanning 11 billion years of cosmic time, found that dark energy, which has always been presumed to be the constant force driving the expansion of our universe, could be weakening. I mean, that, at least that's what the data says. So, massive news.
It is. I'm sure we can get some of our Malcolms onto this to solve the problem. Release the Malks.
Yeah, get them on it. Come on.
Yeah. Come on, Malks.
Malcolms, assemble.
Yes, that's right.
So, yeah, that's what's been going on.
All right. Is that, you know, possible heat death of the universe being accelerated? What's gripping your shit, Hurst? Or is it something not involving the destruction of everything?
Actually, no, it's not. No, that's not gripping my shit. That's just useful to know as I plan my future.
Yes.
What's been gripping my shit is hyperbole. Now, especially when used as clickbait, hyperbole is horribly frustrating.
Oh, yeah.
The words destroyed, epic, owned, shut down, they're in all of the titles of YouTube video, like Trump gets destroyed by Democrat, or this guy was owned on the basketball court. So I've tried to work out my own translation. So destroyed equals beat. You got beaten.
Okay.
Epic is good.
Yes.
Owned usually refers to disagreed with evidence.
Right.
And shut down is argues with.
As well with headlines, you've got, come on, brain. Betteridge's Law of Headlines, which states that if a headline ends in a question mark, the answer is no. Yeah. Is this the end of Facebook? No. Like, that's the answer. I've caught Hurst a choke on his vodka. It's tea, listeners. It's
yeah,
tea.
I was thinking about when you during the week when I was talking about Lent with my mum and the fact that you've given up fizzy drinks.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, what would be my equivalent of giving up tea? And no.
There you go. It's still going strong. I don't know how many days are left. I must have done quite a few. But the rankers don't care about me not drinking fizzy drinks. They care about who was the winner of the top five coolest animals. And ooh, I suspect you care about that too, Hurst.
I really care.
Would you like the results?
I would very much like the results.
Oh, I seem to recall, Hurst, that you were a very, very confident young man.
Of course I was.
Why?
Of course I was. It felt like you really phoned it in. When your first animal was a goat and then it was a cow, I was like,
I contend that goats are fucking cool. I didn't even mention the fact you can get teeny tiny versions of goats, which are just teeny tiny goats, which are cool. Anyway,
yeah, they're cool, but they're not top five cool. Not out of 11 trillion animals.
They are cool. Cows are cool. They constantly wear a leather jacket. They're super cool.
Not top five cool. Or are they?
We don't get to decide which of us was correct of Hurst. That is up to you, our rankers, who vote on our website. So let's have a look at how it went. Hurst, it was very close.
Please, I can't be back-to-back-to-back loser here.
In fact, there is one vote in it, Hurst.
One vote.
One vote separates the two.
All right, okay.
Hurst, you have 16 votes.
Come on.
I have 15 votes.
Oh, thanks for that.
You are correct in your ranking of the coolest animals. Please remind us of what the coolest animals are so we can put them into the official world ranking.
Okay. Number 5 was the immortal jellyfish. Number 4, the duck-billed platypus. 3, blue whale. 2, great white shark. And number 1 was, of course, the mighty golden eagle.
There you are. They are the top 5 coolest animals. A few comments from our excellent voters, who thank you very much for taking the time to vote and for leaving a comment. If you want us to mention your name, have to put it in your comment, or I don't know who you are. Some person who voted for me said, always goats. So they're either talking about the animal, but I like to think they're actually talking about us. We are the goats of everything, or at least what's been chosen that week.
We're certainly the goats of this show.
Oh, yeah. Someone has said, well, farmyard animals are cool. They have no place in a top five coolest animals ranking. Sorry, which I feel rather contradicts themselves. They just said they were cool.
Yeah, they are cool.
So obviously they have a place there. But
if you're cool, it doesn't mean you're top five cool. And also officially they aren't.
Officially they're not cool. Well, they can still be cool, but they're not the coolest.
Yeah.
Yes. Most of my votes seem to have come from the fact that I mentioned dogs and you didn't. It seems to be that simple. People are loving dogs being cool, but they're not as cool as the five things that are on the list. So let's move on, because I was the loser. Obviously, your list was okay.
It was an absolute annihilation. I destroyed you.
Well, shall we find out if you can do it again, Hurst?
Let's do that. Let's
crack in and get ranking. All right, cool. Here we go. Hit my laptop. It is heads for Hurst. You are leading us off, sir.
Yeah, this was an outstanding year for movies. I wasn't aware of quite how much had happened. Maybe there was some kind of millennium thing and everyone wanted to just get their best movies out before the potential.
Oh, the millennium bug killed us all. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Planes dropping out the sky. So it was actually quite challenging.
It was.
For those who follow us on the Facebooks, there was, how big was your inverted commas shortlist?
my shortlist was 28. I got it down to 21 and then I just had to...
watch a bunch of movies
and watch a bunch of movies, which I was very, very happy about, apart from the ones that I watched to see which was the worst. But there we are.
Just to confirm, 28 is not a short list, it's just a list.
Well, it is a short list when you compare it to the number of amazing films that came out.
Yeah, it's a lot to choose from, and whilst I was quite good at locking in my top four, number five has switched over and over and over again, but we got there in the end. So without further ado, I will hit you with my number five, which was Being John Malkovich. Now, that's a weird old film, but it's just so unique. It's about a guy who's a puppeteer who isn't a successful puppeteer. He gets a job in a weird, short-ceilinged building and finds a little cupboard. And when he crawls into it, he crawls into the mind of John Malkovich for 15 minutes, gets to watch what he's doing in a voyeuristic kind of way. And then after 15 minutes, just gets dumped on the roadside at a motorway interchange just outside the city.
Fucking bizarre.
Yeah. They then monetize this thing. But all the other characters, the main character, including Cameron Diaz, who, for such a beautiful woman, she really managed to make herself look quite ordinary in it, which was fantastic to see because the characters were all so normal. Even like the super attractive love interest was not Hollywood attractive. She was just regular. Yeah, if that woman worked in the office with you, you'd probably quite fancy her. It was gritty and real and, for me, something that's that unique is always appealing. It's like the film Yesterday, where as if the Beatles never happened apart from for one guy who knows it and knows all the tunes. Yeah, I highly recommend watching it, but prepare to be weirded out.
Solid choice. My number five is an animated movie called The Iron Giant, and it's fantastic. The Iron Giant is about a giant robot made of iron, who could guess, that fell to Earth in the 50s. He's an alien giant robot and is discovered by a boy called Hogarth. And after a rocky start, because, you know, he's a giant and scary, they become friends. They go on adventures and shenanigans. But then, boo, the American military finds out. And obviously, everything goes tits up and things occur. And the end of the film will make you sob like a baby. I'm just going to say the word Superman. And if you know, you know. It was directed by Brad Bird, who'd later worked for Pixar, and spoilers for when we do the top five Pixar movies, he directed the best one they've ever done, which is obviously The Incredibles. Iron Giant itself, sadly, was nowhere near as successful as that. It didn't do very well at the box office. In fact, it lost money, even though it was universally loved by critics. Folk who know about these things blame the lack of marketing. I have no idea about that. All I know is I loved it, and it's superb. The Iron Giant. Check it out if you haven't.
Oh, there we go. I've not seen it, but I think I will, and I'm what a good old cry.
It's very good.
And number four for me is the cult classic American Pie. Actually, not even a cult classic, just a classic. It was hugely popular.
Straight up classic.
Considering all of the incredible films that were out that year, things like Girl Interrupted that got Angelina Jolie her Oscar and just Green Mile. So many incredible films for a base level comedy to come in at number four. It really had to be something, but it absolutely was. The word MILF came out of it this one time at Bandcamp. It was so quotable, but most importantly, it was so relatable to anyone of our age.
Yes.
18-year-old boys trying to get laid are just the most clueless numbskulls there are in all of the world. It's a point of life that you have to go through. But looking back, you can never really be proud of how you delivered yourself in those days. But it had all of the classic. It had the cool jock guy who was doing all of the wrong moves and making an idiot of himself and failing miserably. You had the really nerdy guy who was failing miserably. You had the guy who had a girlfriend but somehow was still failing miserably. And then the guy who was a bit quirky and out there and just was happy in his own skin, who had a good strategy, but then naturally it backfired because he pushed it too far. But the whole thing was just hilarious from start to finish. Just a classic comedy of the time. So for me, number four, American Pie.
Yeah, fair enough. I think possibly you're playing a bit safe there, Hurst, maybe playing to the crowd of rankers a little bit with your choice of American Pie, because we do know the general age demographic.
All right, dogs.
All right, what's up? Because for my number four, I've chosen American Pie.
I can't believe you're pandering to the audience so badly.
Yeah, right. Imagine choosing American Pie. Hey, listen, you know what Hurst just said, and he's right. It is properly a classic movie. It is our coming-of-age story for our age generation. If you're older than Hurst and I, then you had things like Animal House and Porky's and Bachelor Party. If you're younger than us, then you had Superbad. We had American Pie.
Yeah.
And we were very blessed in that regard. God, it's good. God, it's good. Stifler is one of the most terrible and obviously one of the greatest characters of all time, because he is just horrific and you would hate to actually be friends with him, but to watch him, amazing. I watched it for recording this podcast and I was quite surprised that it wasn't as inappropriate as I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be absolutely horrific when viewed through a modern lens, but it's not that bad. It still has problems, obviously. A girl undressing being live streamed on the internet without her knowledge, that's not cool. Don't do that, anyone. But mostly it was actually quite good-hearted, and it was the guys that were the idiots. The women very much, you know, were the what am I trying to say?
Yeah, the sensible ones.
The sensible ones, yeah.
They're basically exactly like real life. 18-year-old boys are awful and 18-year-old women have actually become women.
One thing I did realise when I rewatched it was that there is an entire plot about the jock guy and Heather, Oz and Heather, being in an a cappella band together, which I wiped entirely from my brain because it was so dull. Oz and Heather were completely and utterly dull. But it doesn't matter because the film is so great, you can get along without it. And obviously it spawned a million sequels and spin-offs, but the original remains the best. It was a rite of passage for people my age. American Pie was excellent.
Now, my number three is Toy Story 2, which in a year of just an unbelievable crop of films, having an animated kids film at number three does seem excessive, but to be honest, I just don't think it is. Now, the original Toy Story was the first Pixar film, and in fact, the first computer-generated animation ever to have a feature-length film, and it was brilliant because it set a standard for children's films that were enjoyable to adults as well. There was enough humor going across it, which has just spawned a whole genre of films that make go to the cinema with your kids much more bearable. Not that I have kids, but if I did, at least I'd be happy to go and see something like that, as opposed to, I don't know, Paw Patrol movie, which, I don't know, maybe that's even got adult bits in. But Toy Story was just hilarious. But what Toy Story 2 did was it took all of the good bits from Toy Story and just enhanced them. Just the whole thing is just a a lovely story, and it's really fucking funny. They just have so many great bits. So John Ratzenberger, who plays Cliff Clavin in
Cheers,
which if you haven't seen Cheers, watch Cheers. He plays Ham, and Ham is just Cliff, and his little stats is like, and he says, when they were working through the official kidnap of Woody, it's like precisely 8:32-ish. calling Rex Godspiller when he knocks something over. Brilliant. And because it's Disney homed as well, they've got legit Star Wars sound effects in it. So lightsaber sound effects and
right.
the phase of the pew-pew, that's all in there as well. And it's just, it parodies the whole Star Wars Vader Luke thing with Buzz and Zorg. It's just hilarious. And there's one bit that just made me go, this is what makes it so special. So when Andy's mum is fishing around for things that she can stick in the yard sale, Rex is standing there. They're all perfectly still because obviously there's a person around. They have to be perfectly still. Mm. His hand's reaching around, grabbing bits around him, and his eyes just flicker up just briefly just to look at the hand, and it's perfectly just tiny little bits. It's so brilliantly executed, and it is, for me, the standard around which all future Pixar and other computer animated films really built that genre.
It is a cracking film. My number three is Dogma. Dogma is a film by the director and writer Kevin Smith, who originally wrote a movie called Clerks in 1995, which was a black and white film with a budget of $27,000. So, you know, nothing at all. Then he did, when that was a success, then he did Mallrats and Chasing Amy, which had higher budgets, but were both very much still low budget films, and all three were great. Miramax gave him an absolute truckload of cash to make a movie called Dogma, which was about two fallen angels that God banished to Earth, and they found a loophole that would let them get back into heaven, but unknown to them, if they did that, they would in the process destroy all of creation. Obviously, the heavens don't want that to happen. So a lady is visited by an angel played by Alan Rickman, and she is tasked with stopping the renegade angels from getting back into heaven. And she picks up some helpers along the way, notably including Jay and Silent Bob, who are the stoners who have appeared in every Kevin Smith movie, and Rufus, the 13th apostle, who happens to be black and was taken out of the Bible because of that. It's just a brilliant film. Dogma, it's funny, it's exciting, but most of all, it's really clever, and it doesn't shit on religion like you think it would do. It just makes a really good story. Now, the fact that it didn't shit on religion obviously didn't stop idiots from protesting it, and they were kind of protesting outside movie theaters that were showing the film. And actually, Kevin Smith went to a movie theater in New Jersey just to see what the audience reaction was like, got caught up in the protest outside, because no one knows what the hell he looked like, or they didn't at the time, even though he was in the goddamn film, which they obviously hadn't seen. He joined the protest on their side and actually got onto the local news saying something along the lines of, "I don't think the movie stands for anything positive at all," with a perfectly straight face, which is just epic. The protesters obviously hadn't seen the film they were meant to see. The cast was fantastic and all over the place. You had Ben Affleck and Matt Damon as the renegade angels. You had Salma Hayek, you had Jason Lee, Alan Rickman, you had Chris Rock, you had Alanis Morissette, and it should have been a disaster, and it wasn't. I love Dogma. I watched it far too often, and I don't care. I'm going to watch it again, and you should too. Number three, Dogma.
Yeah, I love that thing about the protest. I think that's absolutely hilarious that the people are there just, me, I do like it, but I don't really know what I'm talking about. He's like, yeah, me too.
Yeah, he's in the film, and none of you recognize him.
Yeah, come on. That's funny. So for me, number two, this was actually quite difficult between one and two. They flip-flopped a little bit, but just because such quality. But for me, my number two is Fight Club with Brad Pitt and Edward Norton.
Squirrel here. Hearst is about to drop some pretty major spoilers for Fight Club, so if you don't want it ruined, skip forward to 26 minutes and 15 seconds.
But the film's about Edward Norton's character, who works in a fairly boring insurance adjuster's office. And when they get back from a trip, having met a really dynamic, cool, good-looking guy, Tyler Durden, who sells soap, and when Norton gets back to his house, his flat has been blown up by a gas leak. So he's got Durden's number, so he calls him, and they meet up for a drink, and he says, "Hey, just ask me, man." It's like, "All right, can I stay with you for a bit?" It's like, "Yeah, of course you can." Then when they're outside, Brad Pitt's character, Tyler Durden, says, like, punch me in the face. It's like, hey, what? It's like, punch me in the face. I've never been punched in the face. I want to know what it feels like. And so he does that. And then they punch back and they end up having this massive bundle. And then other people come and watch it. And it turns into a fight club. And the first rule of fight club is you don't talk about fight club.
Mm.
And that has become just a saying in whatever you're doing. It's the first rule of insert whatever we're doing is you don't talk about insert whatever we're doing. Mm. And that's from Fight Club because it's such a great line. Also, as it happens, the second rule is you don't talk about Fight Club. And then they go on for some other rules.
Yes, the third rule is try your best and have fun.
Is it? That's just it. So this Fight Club thing happens and then it swells and swells and there are chapters all over America. And then they turn their attention to basically terrorism and anarchy. And when eventually Norton confronts Tyler Durden and is like, how did you get in here? And why are you doing all this stuff? It turns out that is him and he's got split personality or he's schizophrenic and he's got these two guys and he doesn't realize. And
oh my God.
It's just such a mind blow moment that he's like, oh, wow, that's incredible. What a twist. And then you start thinking back, you're kind of, oh, that's so clever, that's so clever. But when you watch the movie a second time, it's a completely different movie because you know and you're thinking in terms of, well, I know this is him and how clever it is that they've done this movie where you see him not being in the same room as Ed Norton when the female lead, which is Bellatrix.
Helena Bonham Carter.
which is Helena Bonham Carter. The love interest, such quirky outsider as well. And it's just so clever how that relationship between the three of them, which is actually only between the two of them, and just that is basically everything that Edward Norton wants to be. So it's so brilliantly clever. And I thought it was a worthy one or two because it was just a game-changing film.
My number two is Blair Witch, or the Blair Witch Project, to give it its proper name. Everyone's probably heard of Blair Witch, but just in case you haven't, it was a found footage movie. It wasn't the first found footage movie, but it was certainly the first one to break through into the mainstream. It cost $35,000 to make, and it earned $250 million back and kickstarted the entire found footage genre. It was also one of the very first films to use the internet and viral marketing as part of its marketing strategy. Very cheaply done as well. They had a website, I think called Who is the Blair Witch or What is the Blair Witch or something like that, .com. And they were completely always on the side of this is a documentary. This is genuine found footage. It's like kayfabe with professional wrestling. They never let the story slip. And you could watch the documentary that Heather made as kind of a prequel to the Blair Witch Project on the website. And there was just information about the people and the actors in the movie. Their names were just the character names. They didn't change anything. And it was so well done. It was a fantastic film. I clearly remember seeing it in the cinema, which I did several times. But the first time I saw it at the cinema, I remember walking into the cinema with my popcorn and my drink, which I suspect would have been a Sprite at the time. And it is the only film that I can remember where I walked out of the cinema with my popcorn and my Sprite because 5 minutes in, I completely forgot about them because I was just watching the movie, as was everyone around me in the quiet parts of the film. The cinema was just silent. No one was eating. No one was talking to each other. The only noise in that cinema was when something bloody terrifying happened, which it did a lot. The end of Blair Witch is still one of the scariest goddamn things in any horror movie ever. Come at me, bro. It was amazing. I love Blair Witch. I know it caused some people to have motion sickness, which is very sad for them because they missed out on a bloody brilliant film. But it's a bit of a Marmite one. So we'll see what the voters think. Come on, rankers. We'll do this. Number two, Blair Witch.
Yeah, I'm not really a horror fan, but I really respect The Blair Witch for the reason you said it was done on such a budget. How much did it make in the box office?
$250 million off a budget of $35,000. It did have the record for most profit made from such a small budget until it was overtaken by Paranormal Activity, which was another found footage movie.
It was such a clever campaign. If I was looking at this, because when we settled on top five movies in 1999, again, I had to decide whether I was going with what are my top five, what are my favourites, what do I think are the best? when I went with my favourites, but I think based on, you know, on the genre and what it did in terms of just changing everything for a genre, that Blair Witch is just an incredible achievement, not just for the financial profit, but just for setting up a being different, you know, breaking down walls and opening new opportunities. I think it's a fantastic film. So I can absolutely understand why it would be at number two for you if you're a fan of the horror genre.
And it didn't make you feel sick to watch it. All right, well, there we are. We're nearly at our number one. But before we do that, let's discuss the worst movie of 1999. And Hurst, Misa thinks I know what you're going to say.
Fucking Jar Jar Binks. He was the worst movie of 1999.
Just Jar Jar Binks.
Just Jar Jar Binks and The Phantom Menace. Not Star Wars, The Phantom Menace. Just... It ruined a franchise for me, and I know we disagree a little on this, but the first three, especially the first two, were so good, as in episodes 4 and 5. In fact, I would liken Toy Story 2 to Empire Strikes Back, because the first one was so groundbreaking and brilliant, but the second one, using the same ideas, was even better. And so for, it was 1983, I think, Return of the Jedi came out. So some 17 years, 16 years later, which now in the concept of these all being 26 years old doesn't seem that long, but it seemed like forever at the time.
It doesn't seem that much anymore.
People were so excited about the backstory because they'd been so clever about making episode 4 the first one, knowing that there was backstory and there was 9 in total. Really clever move. But then just to come in and just spaff all over it like that and just wipe his ass with the whole franchise. It was such a hateful thing to do that it ruined it for me, as far as I'm concerned. That some were all right since. They realised the mistakes they made and then just remade A New Hope for episode 7.
But, yes, they absolutely did.
So those first three are the Star Wars franchise for me, and I know that the Malcolms will hate on it, and my good friend Mark, who is the Star Wars Malk, will say there are other things. And he has got me to watch the Attack of the Clones cartoon, which I started last week.
It's been quite good.
It killed a franchise for me. I mean, I want to see Darth Maul with robot legs. That's the main reason for me watching it. But it killed the franchise, and it was the highest grossing film, which is how much people were anticipating something spectacular, and they just shit in a bowl and called it breakfast.
So you didn't like it then?
No, not even a little bit. Actually, no, a little bit, because of Darth Maul.
Yeah, Darth Maul and the epic lightsaber fights. What about the pod racing?
Yeah, but even that had Anakin all over it, didn't it? It's like, oh, I wonder what this button does. Well, I'm Anakin. Yes,
why wouldn't you know what the button did?
I think it did, actually. That was a spaceship. And for example, it's just all his little one-liners were just, disasters. Freaking Pinocchio is not a real boy.
Fair enough.
Get someone better. Get him a better script.
All right. Cool. Well, my worst film of 1999 was nearly a film called Wing Commander, which was based on a video game, which I really liked, and the film was rubbish, but it wasn't my worst film. Let me start from a little bit earlier than the film was released. So it was a film called The Rage, and it featured a teenage girl who was at school, and she was getting bullied, and she couldn't get a boyfriend, and then maybe she was getting a boyfriend because he felt sorry for her because she was being bullied, and they were going to go to a big party together. Yay! But everyone was still bullying her, and she developed telekinetic powers. What? And they went to the big party, and all hell broke loose because she just killed a load of people with her mind powers. And if you're thinking, I noticed you put your hand up, Hurst. Do you have a statement to make?
Didn't they already make that film?
Yes, they did. It was called Carrie, and it was amazing, and it was made in the 70s. And at some point, whilst writing The Rage, they must have realised this. So rather than going, we've just totally cribbed King and we've rewritten his stuff, they just called it The Rage Carrie 2 instead. And somehow the lead girl was, I believe, the half-sister of Carrie. She had the same dad, and... Oh, God, why? Why would you carry on? Why would you carry on making a film that was worse in every single way, but exactly the same? It was god-awful. Carrie, fucking great. The Rage, Carrie 2. Not even Carrie 2, The Rage, because they'd already made the freaking film. I don't know. It was trash. Utter crap. It wasn't worth it. Why did they do it? Why did they do it? It just made me angry. Why did they fucking bother?
Unless the two was T-O-O, then it doesn't make sense.
Yes, I mean, Carrie as well.
Yeah.
The Rage. We didn't do our homework. The movie. Fucking hell. Well, it wasn't even... it's shit. It's just shit.
Haven't seen it? Not gonna.
Don't watch it. No, don't bother. It's rubbish.
Right.
Wow.
So, fanfare alert.
What could it be? What could we have chosen, Hurst? This is probably going to be one of the least anticipated number one reveals in the history of Top 5 Face-Off, Hurst. But let's find out, what have you got as your number one 1999 movie?
Well, you know what? I'm that confident that I think we should both announce this together and just talk about it.
Well, let's hope we've chosen the same one then.
The film. If not, we'll have to edit the shit out of it.
Yes, right. That's true.
Our number one this week is... The Matrix. Yeah, it's just such a groundbreaking film in so many ways. It's so relentlessly clever, and it could be real.
I guess, yeah.
That in itself is just bonkers to me.
How would we know?
Really, and we wouldn't know. And that's what makes it better. Yeah, of course it's not real. It's like, yeah, but that's what everyone in the Matrix thinks.
That's what you've been programmed to think, Malk. Come
exactly
on.
Right. And they even made a movie just to taunt us.
Oh, yeah.
So, this is the Matrix. This is what we're doing to you, but you still don't even know.
It's just a brilliant film. It stands up so well. Considering a number of effect shots in the Matrix, they were so well done that you can watch it today and it still blows your mind. If you saw the Matrix for the first time today, you'd see the first bullet time sequence and lose your shit, just like we did in the cinema.
Yeah, it was just a remarkable film. So the concept is that ultimately we invented AI. It took us all out. We scorched the skies because, like, oh yeah, they're reliant on
solar power,
and they went, all right, well, we'll just use people as batteries because we've got lots of energy. And so they plug us into these little containers and feed thoughts into our head that make us believe that we are living in 1999.
Yes, because without doing that, we would die very quickly, right? And when they tried to make us believe we were living in some kind of paradise, the humans would reject that because we're all such natural pessimists. So they just made us live in this crappy universe we've got now, I guess. Yeah. Thanks, The Matrix.
Yeah. So Neo, the main character, gets freed from the Matrix by the gang led by Morpheus. And their whole thing is to battle against the machines to save the last human city of Zion from termination by the machines. I don't know why they can't just leave us alone. They got the Earth, so... But whatever, they did it. Just an incredible film. Like, brilliantly cast, brilliantly acted. Amazing stuff.
Yeah, it was genuinely great. It was just mind-blowing. You couldn't get over what it was like to see some of the things they were doing for the first time. And yeah, some people had done bullet time before, but that was generally in, like... It was never in a feature film, never in a sci-fi feature film either. Freaking loved The Matrix. And it was just such a clever, self-contained story with a clear ending of the good guys winning. And there was absolutely no need to make any more. So really glad that didn't happen. Womp, womp, womp. Never mind.
What I really love about it, though, is that the Wachowski sisters, when they decided they wanted to make this film, they went to Warner Brothers with it, so they wanted $80 million. Mm. Warner Brothers went, no chance, you unknowns.
No.
I will give you $10 million, which is still pretty good. And they made the opening sequence, showed it to Warner Brothers, and went, yeah, all right, then, here's your $80 million, crack on.
Just spaffed money all over them, yeah.
Yeah, and then went shopping for Lamborghinis. It was just a remarkably different film, and spawned, again, like all of these best films, the amazing quotes that we still use today, like, there is no spoon, or, God, why, oh, why didn't I take the blue pill? And
yes, I know kung fu.
Yeah, show me.
Show me. Morpheus was so cool, just effortless cool throughout the entire film as well. Like, he's just one of those people.
Anyone else wearing those piddly little sunglasses on his nose would look stupid.
Oh, look absolutely ridiculous.
But he just looked badass, absolute quality. So just masses to love about The Matrix. And it was no surprise that we both had that as our favourite. I mean, Fight Club did bother it for me because it was such a good film and it was so well acted.
It was. The fact that Fight Club isn't on my list was... turmoil for me this week, but you know, this just goes to show how many good films were in 1999. I mean, we didn't.
It's going to be difficult for the rankers, though, isn't it?
It's going to be a tricky one for the rankers
because we've got two that are the same on this. We've never had one the same before. Now we've got two.
Yes, that's true. Unless you have listened to our number zero show, then we've never had an agreement before, and definitely not a number one.
Yeah,
that's the first time this has happened. So very exciting stuff. Hurst, do you have a fact and an estimated fact for me about the
Matrix? I do. I have these things for you.
Excellent. Oh, I look forward to doing my best.
Fact. Originally, Tom Cruise was offered the role of Neo, but he had committed to filming Magnolia.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was about that time.
It was another 1999 film. Fact. More than half of the dialogue from Neo, 56% in fact, in the movie, is made up of questions.
He does ask a lot of questions. Now, I know that Will Smith was originally attached as Neo. Doesn't mean it couldn't have been Tom Cruise as well, but I'm going to go with the questions. I'm going to say it was Will Smith and Neo. The fact is that Neo mostly asks questions in The Matrix.
Bravo. It is a fact that more than half of Neo's dialogue is questions, and Tom Cruise was not offered the role. But actually, as it turns out, the Wachowskis wanted Johnny Depp, but the studio wanted Keanu Reeves, according to the facts I found.
Yeah, probably good choice studio, to be honest, which is not a thing you say often, but
yeah, good one. I think so, yeah.
Hurst, I also have a fact and an estimated fact. Would you like to hear
that? You know that I would.
All right, fact. The iconic green text that comes down the screen is actually from a Japanese cookbook and is describing some recipes. Or, fact, when filming the stairway scene in the opening of the film, Trinity sprained her ankle but just ran it off like a trooper for the rest of the day.
Huh.
Carrie Ann Moss, I should say, not Trinity, because Trinity is not real.
Yeah. What's the first one again?
The iconic green text that falls down the screen, you know, the major text, that is actually Japanese characters copied from a Japanese cookbook.
No, that's actually a combination of different types of characters, including some Japanese, but also some Sanskrit and other bits and pieces as well. So it must be that Carrie Ann Moss ran off a sprained ankle.
That's one of the most identifiable images from The Matrix is the green curve that runs vertically down the screen. It was based on rain running down a window pane. It's made up of Japanese katakana characters that were widely copied from a cookbook. I believe the sequels added more shit in it. But if not, my fact is wrong.
Well, I would have to check because my fact said something different because I almost went with that fact.
Well, let's release the mouths. So there we are. Yes, Trinity did not hurt us. She probably did hurt herself because there was some serious stunt action in that film. In fact, I think Keanu Reeves, he had some sort of surgery just before he started, right? And that's why his kung fu was very punchy and not kicky. Okay, rankers, that is our list. And it's over to you to decide which of us is correct. Obviously, one of us is correct. But which one of us is correct? Go to our website, top5faceoff.co.uk. That's the word five or the number five, because I bought the other domain because I was fed up of saying it wrong. And vote for who you think was correct.
Also, if you want to give us money, because we're funny and we need to pay for
and
this.
And informative.
And you're helping us to contribute to a wider database of actual facts.
Yes.
The facts are exact.
Mm.
So, get onto the website and Patreon us, and you too can have some of the limited content that's on there.
Yes.
What's on there?
We recorded a special mini episode about Friends characters. Mm-hmm. We've got some extra outtakes from episodes. We're going to put more of those small episodes on there. We're going to have some video outtakes for the excellent Patreons. And, of course, if you're a Patreon, you get to choose to add stuff to the Wheel of Decision.
And, of course, you get to see the pilot as well, don't you?
You don't. but you will.
You don't get to see the pilot.
No, I told you this the last time we recorded this shit.
I thought it was on there already.
It's never been on there. It will go on there at some point.
All right.
And of course, if you're a Patreon member, you get to add things to the Wheel of Decision, which helps us decide what we're going to rank next week. Hurst, are you ready to spin
that wheel, baby?
I'm not going to spin the wheel because first we've got to look at the wheel and I've got to find the right button.
Okay. Share the wheel, spin the wheel, make decisions.
No, that is Hurst. Can you see the Wheel of Decision?
Oh, boy, can I.
What can you see on the Wheel of Decision, Hurst? What sort of things have we got?
I like the idea of the top five TV theme tunes.
Mm.
80s comedy movies, 90s video games.
Mm.
Games? Snacks up there. There's all sorts of good stuff on there, to be honest. I'd be quite happy with any of those. Especially nice if we can do one that our rankers have put up there for us.
Our Patreons. Yes, indeed. New things from last time. Top five big man action movies. Top five reboots. Top five fictional spaceships. And top five movie villain schemes. All suggested by our excellent Patreons. Thank you all. Hurst, shall I spin the wheel and see what we get?
Spin it.
Here we go. Oh, what's it going to be? Oh, it is Spice Girls songs.
Oh, top five Spice Girls songs.
Spice Girls songs. Well, yeah. That's what we're doing next week. So you want to be catching that one.
Yeah, because it's going to spice up your life.
Oh, God. All right. Let's can it there. Rankers, you can find us.
How do we pick
us.
A worst?
It's Sporty Spice. And no, we're not ranking the Spice Girls. We're ranking. And it's not Sporty Spice. It's Posh Spice. I apologize.
What do you call
the spices? Obviously, the best spice is Ginger Spice, because that's the only one that's actually a spice.
Clearly.
Anyway, you can find us on Facebook, Top 5 Face Off, or on Blue Sky. I took a look at Twitter last week when I made the announcement. Twitter's just a bloody cesspool of Nazis and right-wing idiots, Hurst. So I've been Twitter. We're on Blue Sky now, at Top 5 Face Off. Twitter's gross. Don't use it. You can email us, hello@top5faceoff.co.uk. And, of course, you can join our Patreon. Thank you very much, Rankers. Tell a friend about this podcast, rate and review. That really helps us out. But really, just listen and enjoy. That's all we can ask for. We will see you next week for the top five Spice Girls songs. Please rewind this podcast for the next person to listen. We'll catch you then.
See you later, Rankers. We love you.
Bye, Rankers.
Top 5 Face-Off is presented by Matt Hurst and Matt Squirrel and produced by Powerstorm Awesome Fire Incorporated. For more details and to vote for a winner, visit top5faceoff.co.uk. Thanks for listening.
It was a lemon.
There's a dog on her computer at this point, Eddie.
Eddie, just off you go. If you want a cuddle, you can do that, but just stop moving around. Right. Turns out that the universe has thrown us a massive curveball. The largest ever map of space reveals we might have gotten dark energy totally wrong all this time.
Oh, no.
That's fascinating, right? Tell me another.
And we should probably say what the fuck we're doing.
So what do we do now?
Oh, Hurst. Constant professionals.
Actually, it's well clever, but the Cinnamon is funny.
Beastie. Oh, there's beasties everywhere.
They're favorite. All cool, to be honest. They've all got... Okay, mate. To me, they're all cool. To cool people, they're not mate. At all.
No, don't. Daytime TV, mate.
Yeah, well, after I've had a nap, watching The Chase is great. Really helps me keep my brain back into gear. Right, anyway, we've gone off piste a little bit. So, well, I suppose they know whatever you tell them. They know because you edit it.
Yeah, your number one might be Star Wars, yeah?
Oh, don't do that to me. That would be unfair.
Squirrel here. For God's sake, turn down your volume for this next outtake.
I think Fonzie's about to sing us a tune.
Oh.
I'm hearing the row-rows.
Come on, Fonzie, give us an outtake.
There you go. He's coming, he's coming. Try being in a room with it.
That's pretty incredible.
There's a joke to chuck in. It's like, what have Titanic and The Sixth Sense got in common?
I see dead people. Good one.
See you later, Rankers. We love you.
Bye, Rankers. All right, definitely recorded it that time, Hurst. Top 5 Face Off.